The first aliyah of Parshas Vayigash begins with the word that gives the Parsha its name, Vayigash. Yehuda approaches Yosef, and this word is highly significant. This encounter, the Medrash Rabbah tells us, is evocative of the pasuk in Iyov, Echad be'echad yigashu, one will approach the other, V'ruach lo yavu b'nehem, and there won't be any wind between them, there won't be any space between them, one will encounter the other. This is a reference to Yehuda and Yosef, and there won't be anything between them. This is a reference to the Shvatim that will not come between them. And the Maharitz Tushinsky, Rav Yotzi Tzvi Tushinsky, explains that what's being conveyed here is that Yehuda reached a certain level in the merit of the responsibility that he took on behalf of Binyamin, that he was willing to take complete achrayas for him, to become an are for him in the language of the pasuk. And through that, through the fact that he expressed this great love for a son of Rachel, he was able to atone for the sale of Yosef, and through that take on the representation of all of the Shvatim within himself, and through that ascend to Malchus. And now what you have is an encounter between two kings, Yehuda and Yosef, and the Shvatim understand this, and they step aside and recognize that they can't come between them. And what you have here is a consequential encounter, essentially two kings coming together, representing history. And just as the pasuk says, Lev Melech Beyad Hashem, Kiilu, there isn't Bechira when a king is involved because of the impact on history, that is the implication here as well. Rav Schwab, along similar lines, quoted from his Rebbe Reb Leib Block that Yehuda's sudden change in tone from the way he comes across in the end of the previous parsha, where he seems so broken and here he's so bold, is because he realizes that he has taken on this achrayas for Binyamin, and the power of that responsibility is transformative. The Vilna Gaon has a comment here that is often quoted regarding the trup, the Tameh HaMikra, and he notes that the trup that we have on these words, Vayigash Elav Yehuda, Vayomer Biadoni, is Akadma Azla Revi Zarak Munach Segol. And he reads that to convey that the fourth son got up and went. And why did he do this instead of the Bechor? Because he, Zaraka Monach Segol, he threw himself away from resting with the Am Segula, because he took on this responsibility and he put this upon himself, and therefore he recognized indeed what he had to do. And this idea that he speaks in the ear of the king, that he's whispering, the Netziv suggests that he had to do that because essentially he was saying that he could act like Paro and switch him for Binyamin. And this wasn't really Derech Eretz toward Paro himself, and Yosef could get in trouble if he didn't object, and he allowed Yehuda to speak this way, so therefore he had to whisper, so not to be overheard, so that Yosef wouldn't have an obligation to object. The Paris Yosef comments further that a melech normally is not allowed to be mochel on his kavod, and that's because his kavod, his honor, is that of the nation. But if no one knows what's going on, so then he doesn't necessarily have the same concern. So Yehuda is saying, you don't have to worry here about this problem that you can't be mochel on your kavod, because no one can hear, because I'm whispering. In Pasuk Chaf, Yehuda makes the statement that his brother Yosef is dead, the Achiv Meis. Now, we know this not to be true, so how could Yehuda say something that isn't accurate? So the Meshech Chachma suggests that perhaps Yehuda did believe it, arguing that Yosef would have contacted his father had he still been alive, that they had such a strong relationship, it's inconceivable that Yosef wouldn't have reached out if he were indeed still alive. And this is based on a Rashi and a Gemara in Ksubis, and Daf Chav Beis Amud Beis, there the Gemara talks about a woman who remarries, and Edim have come and claimed that her husband is still alive, And she says that she's sure that he's not, that Barili. So we allow her to remain married, and we trust her statement that she's confident that he's no longer alive. So Rashi explains why she's so confident, because if he was alive, he would have come to me. So the Meshech Chachma suggests it's the same logic, that here she's able to rely on this belief, if he was alive, he would have come to me. Yehuda is saying the same thing, that if Yosef was still alive, he would have come to his father. It happens to be a machlokas, as the Meshech Chachma notes. The Ran doesn't accept that argument. He understands that the wife can only say she's confident that he's no longer alive if she actually saw him die. But Rashi's opinion seems to be enough that she's confident that he would have come, and perhaps Yehuda is using the same logic here in order to assert that Yosef is likely dead. Rashi here, commenting on this pasuk, has a different understanding of what's going on, and Rashi does not understand that Yehuda is actually of the opinion that Yosef is no longer alive, but that Yehuda is saying something that's not true, and he's doing that because of Yira, because he's afraid. And the commentaries on Rashi, such as the Sifrei Chachamim and others, explain that he was worried that if he would acknowledge that Yosef was alive, or possibly alive, then perhaps the Mishnah Lamelech here would have commanded him to go find him, and he didn't want to have to do that. Rabbeinu Ephraim, it's interesting, has two possible explanations here, which may actually be related. One is, he suggests that Yehuda was saying something not true, and that this is perhaps because of the license the Gemara has, Lishanos Bifnei HaShalom. One is allowed sometimes to say something that's not true in order to maintain the peace. Then he has a second interpretation, that maybe since they sold him into slavery, so he could be considered an Ani, and an Ani is considered as someone who is deceased. It seems that really those two interpretations are actually related, because the second idea, that Yehuda's relying on the idea that Yosef is considered as if he's dead because he's impoverished, Yehuda would understand that he's not actually dead because of that comparison. So if he's trying to convey to the Mishnah Lamelech that Yosef is actually dead, so he is misleading him. That isn't something that would be considered honest under normal circumstances. So still, the only justification would be because it's Mishum Shalom. So we find in that sugya of Lashanis Bnei HaShalom that there is a machlokes, whether one can overtly misrepresent the truth, say something that is completely false, or even within that, the language of the Gemara in Yevamos, which gives us this hatter, the language is Lashanos, to fudge the truth, perhaps, to alter the truth, and not l'shaker, to overtly lie. And there are those who understand that, indeed, there isn't a license to say something completely false, but only to say something that is misleading. So perhaps the second interpretation, he is indeed also relying on this heter, but saying something that is misleading without saying something overtly false in order to preserve some degree of emes, even while relying on this idea that he's doing so because of Shalom. The Aliyah ends with Yehuda saying about Yosef and his father Yaakov, Nafsho Kishura Benafsho, that their souls are intertwined. And the Balaturim explains that this bond is through Torah. And indeed, the Gemara Maseches Brachos on Daf Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph, and in Erevin on Daf Samach Dalet, Lamed Aleph, as discussed in the Sefer Imre Yitzchak, tells us that when one parts from someone else, so they should always part on Divrei Torah, and through that's how they are remembered. And therefore, this idea that there is a bond that connects them, even when they are separated, and that bond is created by Divrei Torah, is consistent with that notion from the Gemara. And the Imre Yitzchak quotes from his father-in-law, Reb Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, that the idea that it's specifically Torah that allows people to be remembered even when they're separated is because Torah specifically, there's an obligation to remember it. One has to review again and again to make sure he fulfills the obligation to remember his Torah. Anything else, he could simply forget. But when it comes to Torah, he's obligated to remember. And there's also an obligation of being Mevi Davar B'Shem Omro. Torah has to be repeated in the name of the one who originally taught it. So we put those two ideas together. If people part with words of Torah, so then they will be remembered, because each one is going to have to review that Torah idea to make sure he doesn't forget it, and he's going to have to review it together with the name of the person who told it to him. So this idea that parting with Divrei Torah is a way to create a bond of memory is particularly resonant here, especially because we know that later on in this parsha, Chazal will tell us that Yaakov is able to realize that indeed Yosef is still alive when he is given a reminder of the final sugya that they learned together before they parted, something that we will learn about as this parsha continues.